And welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Paul Glastris, the editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly and a senior fellow at the Western Policy Center in Washington, D.C. From September 1998 to January 2001, he was a special assistant and senior speechwriter to the President Bill Clinton. He wrote over 200 speeches for the president on subjects ranging from education to health care to the budget. And before joining the White House, Paul Glastris spent 10 years as a correspondent and editor at U.S. News & World Report. And also joining us is Mike Lux, a partner at Democracy Partners and the co-founder and CEO of Progressive Strategies. He served as a special assistant to the president for public liaison in the White House from 1993 to 1995 and is the author of the widely praised book, The Progressive Revolution, How the Best in America Came to Be. Welcome to Background Briefing, Paul Glastris and Mike Lux. And let me begin with you, Paul. You, as a former presidential speechwriter, what magic words could you write that could change the minds of the majority of Americans and members of Congress while simultaneously addressing the president's war plans and the Russian peace offer?
Well, you know, I think some version of "I told you so" would serve him well, and I think from the reports, that's what he's going to say. Essentially, the president needs to get out and say that he drew a red line about chemical weapons. Assad used the chemical weapons. He threatened the use of force. And now Assad has backed down and is offering to negotiate away his chemical weapons, to sign the chemical weapons ban, to let in international inspectors. And that is an excellent outcome and wouldn't have happened without the threat of force. I think that's going to be the heart of his message, and it for the most part, happens to be true.
But it would seem logical that he has to keep the leverage of a threat of force at the same time entertain a route towards peace. And do you see any mixed message there?
Oh, no, not at all. The two go together, right? I mean, it was the threat of force that brought Syria to do this. As of yesterday, Syria was denying that it even had chemical weapons. Today, it admits it. So right there, you've seen that the threat of force has brought progress. That is a piece of progress that the Syria can no longer take away. So the threat of force is part of it, and he won't relinquish it. He'll remind the American public that he retains that ability and that intention. And he'll pressure Congress now to support it in a way that Congress was not willing to support it by saying, absent the threat of force, we can't do our diplomacy. We now have a diplomatic path to resolving the situation that came about through a threat of force. Absent the threat of force, that diplomatic path may disappear.
So, Paul Glastris, do you think that the president can characterize military force as an option, not as an imperative now, and will that help him avoid an embarrassing defeat in the Congress?
I think that's exactly right. You said it. It is now something in the background, something to be brought out if the diplomatic path fails, but something that does not now have to happen. Before, the debate was, he's used chemical weapons, I need to hit him with force. Now the debate is they've agreed to to give up their chemical weapons. Let's make sure they do that.
Let me bring in Mike Lux, the CEO of Progressive Strategies. Mike, do you think that the president has an opportunity here that, for example, Rand Paul is a rising star in the Republican Party and attracting a lot of young people on many of whom are on the progressive left, who are attracted to his anti-war stance. And it would seem to me an irony if the Republicans win as an anti-war party and the Democrats lose as a pro-war party. Because the American people, clearly the majority, are against war and they want the troops to come home and they want to fix America first.
Yeah, I think the politics of this have always been a mess. I hope that the diplomatic dance that's going on will give the president a chance to get himself out of the box, really, that he put himself in with the red line and the push for a military strike as opposed to any other option. But the politics has been a terrible mess for him. Democrats historically have not liked military intervention. Republicans have, but they don't like Obama. So he had nowhere to go on the politics of this and was really, frankly, screwing himself on it. Paul may well be right that now he can sort of make a rhetorical pivot that will help himself. I hope he can. But the dynamics of this politically are terrible for the president.
And Paul, what happens, for example, you're already starting to see some complications at the UN and Vladimir Putin, who was initially aboard the plan, is saying that the Syrians handing over their chemical weapons won't work unless the United States and its allies promise to use force. And we just got through discussing that this is the leverage that the president has, so he's unlikely to give that up. And then China and Iran, of course, have endorsed the plan, the slip of the tongue plan from John Kerry, if you will. So what happens could this thing just be sort of, fizzle in a way where they just go back and forth and argue about the details before they even get to getting rid of these weapons? I mean, how is the president going to maintain the urgency of his leverage under these conditions?
Well, there is now a gaping difference between what the Russians say they'll support and what the French, who have been spearheading the UN resolution, Security Council resolution, have put forth. It is what you say. The Russians say that the resolution should explicitly take military action off the table. The French and the Americans and the Western allies say no, force should stay on the table. I guess the question is, can they find some wiggle room in the language? These are, after all, UN people. They're good at that, where each side can claim a victory and move forward. And my guess is yes, but you never know. It could be an insuperable obstacle. And the other issue, of course, is will Syria, will Assad stand by his word? He's now got Russia and Iran, who really, really, really don't want to see the United States bomb their ally Syria, and they're going to be pressuring him to give these weapons up. But, you know, he's broken his word many a time before. So there's a lot of diplomacy and a lot that needs to happen before we know what the resolution of this thing is. But that said, my gosh, the last 24 hours has been an unbelievable turn of events, and one that put the president from a position of declining strength and declining leverage to one of just the opposite.
But Mike Glax, do you think the president can maintain that leverage and that position that Paul Glass just described if negotiations go back and forth at the UN? And the Congress sort of is waiting I don't imagine they're going to do a vote soon, are they? What are they going to vote on, a peace plan or a war plan?
Well, I think that's right. I think no one knows at this point. And I think that negotiating is better than bombing, always. If you can, be in a position where you are, where you're talking rather than killing people, that's the best thing. And so, hopefully, we have you know, a few days where we work this out. And I think in the meantime, Congress has to wait and should wait. It doesn't make any sense for them to move forward, given that things are changing. Not just every day, but it seems like every hour.
And Paul Glassos, I know you've got to go to the BBC studio right now. Any quick last word?
Well, I'll tell you, I was in the White House during the Kosovo bombing and was in Bosnia during, as a journalist, during that end of that war. And these types of things are never popular with the public. They certainly weren't popular with the American public in the 90s, only if you know, an enemy of the United States does something stupid and attacks us directly, does the public really support military action? But the one thing that we battled in the White House the night that the day that Milosevic agreed to pull troops out of Kosovo was whether that was to call that a victory or not. And you had a whole group of people associated with the Pentagon and the State Department insisting that the president couldn't call it a victory. It was too early, too much could happen, Milosevic might change his mind, et cetera, et cetera. And then there was a whole bunch of people on the political side saying, oh, are you crazy? Call it a victory. This, you have the attention of the American people, call it what it is. And the political side, which I supported, kind of sort of won, not as fulsomely as we would have liked. And I would say today, I'm hoping that the White House doesn't make this too much of a diplomatic kind of speech and makes it makes clear how things have turned in our direction on this one. As Mike said, negotiating is better than bombing. Everyone wants this to work. And the president needs to make clear that perhaps we really have turned the corner here.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Paul Glassos, again, editor-in-chief of the Washington Monthly and a senior fellow at the Western Policy Center in Washington, D.C., and a former senior speechwriter to President Bill Clinton, who wrote over 200 speeches for the president. And I'm going to continue here now with Mike Lux, who is a co-founder and CEO of Progressive Strategies. But just to the general political question I have about the kind of political zeitgeist in the United States, Mike, it seems to me that what we're learning from this war resolution vote and from what the polls tell us from the American people and what the American people are telling their representatives who have just returned from their vacation, the American people really are tired of war. They're tired of boots on the ground in the Middle East. They appear to want the troops to come home and the government to start taking care of America and not wasting lives and treasures on these failed and losing and lost wars. So do you think that there's a paradigm shift underway and that it's the real political challenge is who's going to run with the ball here? Mike?
Well, I don't know if I'd go as far as to say a paradigm shift. I think people are very tired of war, and they're very cynical. I mean, the Iraq war and the way the Bush administration handled it made people incredibly cynical about being lied to, because they were lied to and they were manipulated. And you look back on the quotes that Bush and Cheney and all of the administration was doing, they were ridiculous. And in retrospect, they look horrible,
but they're paralyzing the current conditions. I mean, that seems to be it's the ghost and shadow of Bush and Cheney that's making it impossible for Obama to make his case that this is different with Syria and chemical weapons are being used.
I think that's right. And you know, I do think. I mean, I will say this, Paul. I think Paul was wrong when he said that military intervention is never popular. It has been popular multiple times in in the last 50 years. You know, we've seen it a number of different times that the American public really did get behind military action early on and supported it. But I think what has shifted because of the Iraq War, and just because people are sick and tired of being at war. We've been at war for a long damn time now, and people haven't seen much out of that. You know, we don't have a particularly friendly government in Iraq. The government we're propping up in Afghanistan is corrupt and doesn't like us very much. We have spent literally trillions of dollars and thousands of lives, and we haven't really accomplished very much at all. And we, in fact, we've made some situations worse. So people are sick of it, and they should be. I think the politics is shifting a lot. I think that Obama's playing a very dangerous game if he wants to be the war president at this moment.
Mike Lux, I thank you so much for joining us here. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.